to provide for our families. So that's the battle. Wives, your husband wants a wife who believes in him. You were probably his biggest cheerleader when you were dating. Are you still your husband's biggest cheerleader? Now, obviously there is the extreme of workaholic, okay? And we're not saying that. There needs to be a balance. Just like everything in our Christian walk, there needs to be a balance. You need to work hard, do a good job, do the best you can to provide for your family, but you still are the leader of your family, and you have to be with your family. So we're not talking about workaholics. In his book, Emerson has a really good section in Appendix E about how to deal with a workaholic, okay? All right, so for the conquest, the things we want to remember, your husband will feel you appreciate his desire to work and achieve when you tell him verbally or in writing that you value his work efforts. And sometimes, you know, if you know your husband hates his job, it's even more important to be supportive. You express your faith in him related to his chosen field. You listen to his work stories as closely as you expect him to listen to your accounts of what happens in the family. You see yourself as his help to dream, as you did when you were dating. You don't dishonor or subtly criticize his work in the field. Remember, we talked about that being out and about, which today you might even be, you know, you might be working from home, things are going, but it's an outside job, to get him to show more love in the family. So you can't do one to get the other. Okay. Hierarchy. And maybe even a better word, even Emerson says this in his book, might be headship. Provide and protect, and even die. John 15, 12, and 13 says, this is my commandment, this is Jesus speaking, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. And it certainly goes to the, that's kind of maybe less natural to be laying down your life for your friends, but your family, that should be a given. And with a man, it is. Now, Jesus laid down his life, and we are to husbands, right? We're to exemplify the Jesus. So that's something that is innate in a husband, I think, is to provide, protect, and even die for our family. Ephesians 5, 22 to 24 explains God's hierarchy. Wives, submit to your own husband as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives submit in everything to your husbands. 1 Timothy 5, 8, but if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So, and a Christian man who knows the word, he understands how important it is to be providing for his family. This can help explain why there is a conflict sometimes between a husband and, or within a husband about, you know, loving your job and providing for your family. And so there's a kind of a conflict between conquest and providing. Okay. Remember, ladies, submit means to rank under. It's not inferior. It's just to rank under. A husband's protection can come in many forms, often unrecognized. And here's an example from the book. One wife wrote to Emerson after attending a love and respect conference. Over the years, when I would drive on ice and start to slide, I'd slam on the brakes. He'd tell me to let off the brakes. The other day, I was driving alone and hit ice. Starting to slide, I hit the brakes, and in my mind, I heard his voice. Let off the brakes. It saved my life, the little wife recounts. I realized from your conference that this counsel to me was for my protection. His firmness with me was rooted in his protective role. So I came home and told him, you saved my life today. I praised him and sought to honor him. Before, I just felt it was a put-down, and that wasn't his motive at all. So I think I shared with you how I was on my wife to lock her door the instant she gets in the car. That's a protective thing. Unfortunately, too many wives don't recognize the depth of his person. A husband wants to be the one who provides and protects. He wants to be an umbrella of protection who would willingly die for his wife if need be. This goes on to kids and so forth. From the book, and this was something that Emerson ran into in a counseling situation, a couple was invited to their friend's house. Their friends just got a new fancy house, you know, the outdoor pool, the fancy kitchen. I mean, they just had everything. And they're coming down, and so the wife of the visiting wife said, "Hey, we'd like to tour your house." "Oh, yeah, sure." And as they're coming down, after they kind of looked at it, the visiting wife says to her husband, "You need a second job." Now, she may have not meant that. Now, see, we got the response from the guys because they're like, "Ouch, that would really hurt," even if it's joking, okay? And the wife might not have had any idea how damaging that was. I think it came out in the counseling session. But, be careful what you're saying because, what did that wife say to that husband? Or how did he take that? "You're not good enough. You're not providing for me. Do like Joe. Be more like Joe," you know? That's really hard to, that's like the man Googling, is that the right word? Not as far as looking online. At a woman, right? It's kind of the same thing. It's the same kind of a put down to your spouse. Okay. Hierarchy. Your husband will feel you appreciate his desire to protect and provide when you verbalize your admiration for him for protecting you and being willing to die for you. You compliment his commitment to provide for you and protect you and the family, and he needs to know you don't take this for granted. You empathize when he reveals his male mindset about position, rank, or being one up or one down, particularly at work. You never mock the idea of looking up to him as your protector to prevent him from looking down on you. You never, in word or body language, put down his job or how much he makes. You are always ready to figuratively light the candles, as E.V. Hill's wife did when they couldn't afford to pay the electric bill. If you've not read the book, there's an example in there of a young pastor's wife. I think this was years ago. And the husband wasn't making very much money. And the wife was running the budget and doing a great job of it, but they didn't have money to pay the electric bill. So I think they were going to have it and get it on pretty quickly, but when he came home from work, she had a candlelight dinner all ready for him, and she was trying to hide the fact that we didn't have enough money to pay for the lights. Now, he figured out, obviously, when he flipped on a few switches and nothing happened, but the intent of his wife meant so much to him, and he did end up being a good provider and all that down the road. You quietly and respectfully voice concerns about finances and try to offer solutions on where you might be able to cut some spending. You know, I think of my sister-in-law and her husband, Dawn's sister and her husband, and they had it kind of, we'd look at them and go, "Man, they just spending money." Well, if the husband went out and spent a whole bunch of money on hunting gear, the wife was like, "Well, then I got my," they were back and forth spending. And nobody was willing to cut back at that point. Okay. Sorry. I've got all timed out what I have to do to get done on time. And we're right on the money right now. Authority. At one of the Love and Respect conferences, while discussing the husband's authority in the home, an eager young wife said, "I want him to be the head. I want him to be the leader. I just want to make sure that he makes decisions in keeping with what I want." Okay, now that was an actual comment. This next one's more of a joke, so be ready to laugh. In a similar vein, there was a couple who got married and decided that he would make all the major decisions and she would make all the minor decisions. After 20 years of marriage, he decided there had been no major decisions. So we learned way back in lesson 3 about the husband that the husband is to be a loving leader, a servant leader. And God has designed marriage for the man to lead. We looked at Jesus as a husband's model on how to lead. Now, remember, guys, that's your job, and that's what we're supposed to be doing. And wives, you can help us grow in that way. But in the bottom line is, wives, you have off some perspective oftentimes, okay? And we need that. And we need to, men, we need to not be proud to take things from our wife. But going back to my instrument panel, as a pilot for flying jets for over 30 years, it got to the point where we would have two experienced captains on the flight deck, okay? But one guy was always designated the pilot in command. And it has to be that way. Someone has to be the final say-so in an airplane cockpit and in a marriage. And the closest thing we ever had to an emergency, we thought our nose tire was flat. I was a full captain experience, and so was the guy in the left seat, but he was the pilot in command that day. And what happened was he said, here's what I think. Kurt, what do you think? We talked back and forth. He had ideas I didn't think of. I had ideas he didn't think of. And in the end, you know, we were in agreement, but it was his final decision. Now, just like in a cockpit, if the pilot in command is going to kill y'all, you got to intervene, right? And just like in a marriage, if the husband wants you wives to do something that's unbiblical or against God or against Scripture, that's where you have to stand against your husband. Okay. And with authority comes responsibility. In the workplace and in the marriage. I've led a department of 10 men for many years, and one guy who he wanted all the authority, but he wanted all the responsibility to fall back on me. And I said, well, if you want to do this particular thing, I mean, obviously I'm the boss, I'm ultimately responsible, just like a husband is ultimately responsible, but you can give your wives authority and still you're going to bear the responsibility. But the wives, you can't be thinking, well, I want the authority, but oh, if it goes bad, it's all on him. Okay? That's not really what we want to see. There is a tendency of wives to focus on their own feelings and fears, but they ignore their husband's feelings and fears. Okay? It just seems to be, particularly from Emerson's experience, that seems to be a trend that way. So as far as he will feel you appreciate his authority and leadership when you tell him you are thankful for his strength and enjoy being able to lean on him at times. You support him as a leader of the family. You never say, you're responsible, but we're still equal, so don't make a decision I can't agree with. You compliment his good decisions. You are gracious if he makes a bad decision. I made a really bad decision when Dawn and I were many years ago trying to be real estate moguls. I made some really bad decisions. They turned out really bad. But Dawn was absolutely gracious. She never really blamed me. I probably blamed myself more. That's what a loving wife does, okay? And I think it prevented me from making such bad mistakes in the future. You disagree with him in private and honor his authority in front of the kids. You give your reasons for disagreeing quietly and reasonably, but you never attack his right to lead. You don't play head games with him to make him back down and be a loving peacemaker. You don't throw your things in his face. Well, you know, you should be the peacemaker because that's what I want. So remember, we're each doing our own instrument panel. Linda.
I don't think I understand your last point. Could you, expand on that a little bit?
So, if you know that he's supposed to be the peacemaker, if you play some kind of trying to force him to be the peacemaker, I think that's what Emerson's talking about. You know, you're kind of head games. You're saying, well, you know, you should be doing this. You know, instead of you doing your part of being respecting his authority, you're trying to make him do his part. Remember, you do your stuff, we got to do our stuff. If we both do it, things work out well. Neither of us does it, that's really bad. And if only one of us does it, well, that's the way it is. All right. I'm 1 minute ahead. There is a tendency of wives to focus on their... Oh, I already said that. Okay. Insight. appreciate his desire to analyze and counsel. It is true that women have a special perspective. I mentioned this before. And that men should listen to them. It is also true that women have blind spots and need the insight of their husbands. And men have blind spots too. But remember, we're talking to the wives today. When a wife comes across that only her way is right and whatever he does or thinks is wrong, the husband will just shut down. Okay? You've got to be gentle to our poor little egos, our fragile little egos. It was Eve, not Adam, who was deceived. 1 Timothy 2:13-14, for Adam was formed first, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. Okay. 2 Corinthians 11:3, Paul refers back to this early chapter in Genesis as fact. But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will lead astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. So the women have more of a tendency to be deceived. Not to say that men can't be deceived also, but there is that tendency. So stop and think, gee, is my husband right on this issue? That I keep getting these calls or I keep getting these emails that my cousin over here needs $5,000. We've got to do it. Well, you know, there's all kinds of scams going on today. So you got to be careful. Most all of you women have figured all that out by now. Yes, men should listen to their wives, but wives should not fail to appreciate the insight God has given to their husbands and reject their counsel. All right, from Emerson's book, husbands and wives need each other. For wives who are willing to evaluate just where they are on the scale of showing unconditional respect for their husbands, there are two questions. One, could you be thinking too highly of your natural discernment and intuition? These are questions wives are asking themselves. Two, is it possible that you might be deceived on certain fronts and that you could use your husband's insight because you don't see what he sees? All of us can be deceived, but women need to think about some areas where they are being deceived. Also, wives, ask yourself if you possibly have an attitude of self-righteousness. At least to some degree. You love your husband very much, but you see his faults, his foibles, and mistakes. You may well believe, as many women do, that you are a better person than he is and that he needs to change. Now, Emerson notes what he's seen in counseling. What I see happening in some marriages is that the wife believes or appears to believe that she does not sin. In many other marriages, the only sin that a wife will readily admit to is her negative reaction to her husband's failure to be loving, or for losing patience with the children. Beyond these areas, some women do not see themselves as sinning, even though they readily admit bad habits and wrong attitudes. And when I was serving on the board some 20 or so years ago, 15, 20, whatever, we had a discipline case where the wife was like, she admitted one sin, one isolated thing, but everything else was her husband. She never sinned. And though at the board we saw what was going on back and forth and they were both sinning. But in this case, this wife would not admit it. The husband did. But anyway. Wives, guard against the attitude that he is the center of all the problems in the marriage. Now, I see, I'm thinking about things that I hear from Dawn, no names, and from Mike. They deal with this a lot. It's not as prevalent, I hope, with a bunch of believers that are active in church and learning about this stuff. So this probably isn't as prevalent amongst you guys, but you need to know this is going on, and maybe it is in your life, so you need to take note. So wives, admit that you also have sins, issues, and weaknesses, and you don't have perfect judgment in every case. Your husband will feel you appreciate his insight and counsel when you tell him up front you just need his ear. Don't complain to him later that he always tries to fix you. Now remember, we talked about the husbands don't always try and fix your wife. Ask her if she just needs you to listen or to fix, okay? So, I mean, there's both sides here. We're not saying, oh, okay, now the husbands don't have to. No, the husbands, we're all supposed to be changing, right? But we're talking to the women right now. You thank him for his advice without acting insulted or like he doesn't care about your feelings. You recognize his problem-solving approaches as he made as his male brand of empathy. Now remember, Ryan, you got to do your part too. I'm just saying. Yeah. You realize your vulnerabilities, especially among males, and value his protection. You counsel him respectfully when you differ with his ideas. You can be right but wrong at the top of your voice. And if you've read the book, you know that there is an incident between Emerson and his wife Sarah where he was wrong, she was right, but she was livid and she was screaming and yelling, and that he just shut him down. He just shut him down. So, and I think that would be pretty natural. So you can be right but be wrong at the top of your lungs. So if you're right, ladies, just, you know, men, we like to think about things, let it, you know, you just say it nicely, calmly, and we'll consider it even though we don't right away maybe respond. Right, Don? let's see. You sometimes let him fix things and applaud his solutions. You let him know that you believe God has made us male and female for a purpose and that we need each other. You admit that you can sin and thank him for his perception and godly counsel. Okay. That's the I. That's the R. R, ladies, is for relationship. This is probably going to be the hardest for ladies to comprehend. Or I don't mean that in an academic way, but I mean to realize or understand. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. So husband's sitting there reading the paper or watching a TV show and says, "Hey, hon, come on in here." You know, and she comes in, sits, you know, so he can look her more straight in the eye kind of a thing, and she starts talking. Well, he didn't call you in there to talk. Necessarily, and remember, I'm not saying, guys, we got to talk, okay? But there are times that women need to just come and sit, and he doesn't want to talk, but she's sure that he must want to talk because that's what she wants to do. She always wants to talk, but sometimes the men, oh boy, don't. But we love having our wife right by us, right with us, right next to us, even though we're not talking, okay? That's the reality of it. Just be there. Just be there with him. I mean, I know I like to, hey, let's go out and sit on the deck, you know? And I don't think I'm going to have time for your video, Jim. We'll throw it in at the end maybe for whoever wants to hang around. But, you know, I'm just sitting on the deck looking at the stars and in my nothing box, right? And I just want Dawn to come out there and sit with me. And sometimes she does and sometimes she doesn't. But women, you like to share experiences by sitting face to face and talking about them, examining and infusing the experiences with your impressions and emotions. Ladies, if you haven't figured it out, men are different. Mike,
yeah, it's up. I want you to try to explain the value you're getting from your wife just sitting there.
We're working on it.
Oh, well, you're still working on it. No. To us, the audience here.
What? Right.
Oh, you're getting it.
Yeah.
Okay. Charge on. Charge on.
Men are different. Men like to share their experiences by sharing an activity. And ladies, this is what your husband wants to do with you. All right, an example. We could almost redo the Brian Regan act. But my son and I, by the time he was junior high school, we'd go out fishing for hours. And sometimes we'd be right next to each other. Sometimes we'd go to a different spot in the pond where we thought the fish were better, you know. And then we talk a little bit about what are you using that's working, and what have you tried this, and then, you know, maybe in the car we talk a little bit about just stuff, and invariably we come home and Don said, well, what'd you guys talk about? Well, not really much. But yet we were together, we were shoulder to shoulder, and we were growing closer and building a relationship and opening things up for the future where we would be able to then have those better talks. The groundwork was laid for the future. Women ask, how can doing nothing build a relationship? But wives continue to report to Emerson that this is exactly what happens. Now here's an example from, I hit a button. Yeah, thank you. One wife decided to go deer hunting. Okay, she had been to Emerson's and Sarah's conference, and so she decided she's going to go deer hunting with her husband. Now, she wasn't a hunter, but she was going to go with him. She helped him set up the blind, and they both sat there for hours waiting for a deer to happen by. They saw nothing, they shot at nothing, and they said nothing. This is a true story from Emerson's experience. Finally, they took down the blind and headed back to the car. To this point, she had said not one word the entire time, taking Emerson's advice completely. As they were walking down the trail, her husband turned to her and said, "This was awesome." True story. Okay.
What was awesome that she didn't say anything?
No, that she was there. That she was there with him the whole time. Shoulder to shoulder. Wives, be patient with just sit by me. Okay? The wife who wants to show her husband that she likes him, that she is his friend, will be patient with his strange request to just come out and be with me. Watch what I am doing, or just watch TV with me. But let's not talk. Okay, now he might not say that. Let's sit out on the deck, look at the stars. Now, guys, that's from her perspective, but you guys, you have to initiate talking with her face-to-face too, okay? Remember, it's both sides. Don't forget all the stuff we learned about you guys have to do. I was just at an event yesterday, outdoors, mainly men, some women, and it was a competitive shooting event, and there was a woman there. I mean, she shot a little bit of herself, but she wasn't a competitive shooter. She didn't like doing that stuff. She was there watching her husband the entire time, and it was hot yesterday and humid, and this is an all-day event. And I got to talk to her just a little bit, and she's just there supporting her husband, and they talked. I mean, it wasn't totally silence. I mean, we were all talking together, but I thought that was really kind of neat and kind of fits in with what I was going to talk about today. What?
Sorry, honey.
No. Obviously, there must be give and take in so many areas of marriage. So just as the husband must make the effort to talk to you face to face, you must make the effort to be with your husband shoulder to shoulder, and sometimes without talking. Anything else on that, Mike?
I'm going to be quiet.
All right. Your husband will feel you value his shoulder-to-shoulder friendship when you tell him you like him and you show it. He knows you love him, but he often wonders if you really like him. You respond to his invitation to engage in recreational activities together, or you come along and just to watch. You don't have to go every time, but just now and then will energize him more than you'll ever realize. You enable him to open up and talk as you do things, shoulder to shoulder. It takes time, okay? You know, if some of you wives try this, don't expect the first time. I mean, all this stuff takes time, and it should always be a growing effort on both of your parts. You encourage him to spend time alone, which energizes him to reconnect with you later. You don't denounce his shoulder to shoulder activities with his friends, to get him to spend more face-to-face time with you. Respect his friendships, and he will be more likely to want you to join him shoulder-to-shoulder at other times. Okay? Daniel.
My wife and I are very much opposite.
Okay. And we...
I just bring it up because I'm recognizing how feminine I am.
Well, you don't look feminine.
Yeah. She loves for me to just be there. If she's going for a run and I'm following her on my three-speed, you know, she thinks it's great.
Yeah. And in the beginning of the class, we talked about these generalizations, about 75 to 25, so, and many marriages, it's flipped. Yep. Good point. Okay. How are we doing? All right. 2 minutes ahead. We might be able to show Jim's video anyway. All right. S, sexuality. Appreciate his desire for sexual intimacy. I'm not necessarily being a coward here, but I think that Emerson in his book addresses this very well, so I'm just going to read a number of excerpts from the Love and Respect book on this section. Someone has said, just as the devil will do everything he can to bring two people together sexually before marriage, he does everything he can to keep them away from each other after marriage. Kind of an interesting concept to think about. A wife needs emotional release through talking. When that need is met, she feels loved. When a man refuses to talk, that symbolizes to her that he does not love her or care about her. A husband has a need for physical release through sexual intimacy. When a wife refuses, that symbolizes to him that she does not care about him and does not respect him and his need. A wife also needs to think about how unfair it is to say to her husband, have eyes only for me, and continually turn him down when he approaches her sexually. As a wife, you spell respect to your husband when you appreciate his sexual desire for you. Okay, two keys to understanding your husband. First, realize that his sexuality is much different from yours. I think most husband and wives have figured that out, but that's the way we've been made. A man is visually oriented when it comes to sexual desire. He sees a beautiful woman, her face, her figure, and he can be stimulated. Women are not visually oriented when it comes to sex, at least not to the degree that men are. The second aspect of being able to appreciate your husband's sexual desire for you is that he needs sexual release just as you need emotional release, intimacy. First Corinthians 7:5, Paul writes, stop depriving one another except for agreement for a time so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. When it comes to our sexuality, both husband and wife need to meet each other's needs. Paul says each is to fulfill his or her duty to the other. Husbands particularly can come under attack from Satan when deprived of sexual release. Wives might be able to better understand this if they think about how they would feel if their husbands didn't want to talk to them or listen to them. Being deprived of emotional release would make most women miserable. Okay. So he will feel you appreciate his desire for sexual intimacy when you respond to him sexually more often and initiate sex periodically. You understand he needs sexual release just as you need emotional release. You let him acknowledge sexual temptations without fearing he'll be unfaithful and without shaming him. For example, let's not watch this show, honey. And most Christian women understand that, oh, that show might be a little bit, you know, something that wouldn't bother a woman at all, but is a temptation to a man, certain character or scenes or whatever. You don't try to make him open up to you verbally by depriving him of sex. Okay, so I think we're getting the picture here. You do your job. He does his job. If we all both work on these, use these as our instrument panels, we're going to be in a lot better shape. All right. Mike, since you are, you know, the big marriage counselor here, you have anything you want to throw in here? I'll give you about a minute, and then I'm going to show Jim Hartwig's video.
Okay, so this whole intimacy thing is one of the big four reasons why people have trouble. And I've never had a person yet that was praying it too much. You know, to give the example of say the prayer in 1 Corinthians.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen that yet.
Right.
That's never the reason why it's not happening. It is a big issue. You wouldn't think people would. It would be, but it is.
Okay.
If it's a struggle in your life, it's no.
Okay.
All right. This is provided by Jim Hartwig. Many of you have seen it before, or at least versions of it. And I'm sure Mike's going to say, well, that's not all quite accurate, and I would agree. But there is a lot of things that it's funny, and it's going to give you a little insight to the difference between how men and women think.
We're going to start discussing men's brains, women's brains, and how they're very different from each other. Now, I want to start with men's brains. All right? Now, men's brains are very unique. Men's brains are made up of little boxes. And we have a box for everything. We've got a box for the car. We've got a box for the money. We've got a box for the job. We've got a box for you. We've got a box for the kids. We've got a box for your mother somewhere in the basement. We got boxes everywhere. And the rule is, the boxes don't touch. When a man discusses a particular subject, we measured this. The University of Pennsylvania a couple of years ago did a study and discovered that men have the ability to think about absolutely nothing and still breathe. You know, they connected all the wires and stuff like that, watch their brain activity, and then all of a sudden, I think he's dead! Huh? Women can't do it. They can't do it. Their minds never stop. And they don't understand the nothing box. And it drives them crazy. Because nothing drives a woman more crazy or makes her feel more irritated than to witness a man doing nothing.
Uh-oh. What happened?
A men's brains are very...
Okay. All right. Well, you've been a great audience. It's been a great 9 weeks. And go out and buy the book if you don't have it. And don't forget about if you want to do a good Bible study, which what we did in this course is to set the tone, is Wayne Mack's Strengthen Your Marriage. And that's a good box, a good book, a good book to go through. We covered, you know, God's purpose of marriage, husband's roles, wives' roles, but it goes into finances and other things in the book. Mike loves it. He uses it in counseling. I think he uses both books in counseling. So, Rochelle.
Real quick, somebody gave us this book for our wedding, and I thought it was a great gift for a wedding gift. So, if you know somebody getting married.
Love and respect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Good. All right. You're dismissed.